This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Check out Anisha's hair today. He is counting it down, baby. We got less than, week and a half to that bad boy's cut? Is that about right, Anish?
A week and a half, yeah. And we, I can actually say it. We're going to actually raise some money for the One Love Foundation, which is raises awareness for relationship abuse. Goes back to Yardley Love, former Virginia lacrosse player who was killed 11 years ago. So we're going to cut the hair, raise money for a good cause. Memorial Day weekend.
Love it. Excellent, excellent, excellent. By the way, number for the program is 844-SAY-ACCN. We continue to stream live on the ESPN app. You've got us on SiriusXM 371. There's an assortment of other radio stations on board as well, so it's all good. All right, we've got a busy, busy show. Jimmy Ashworth is going to join us, the Duke women's tennis coach. Believe it or not, they jump on number one North Carolina tomorrow. We'll get in all that stuff with Jamie. Link Jarrett, Notre Dame baseball coach. The Irish have clinched the Atlantic Division. They are one of the truly best stories in all of college baseball. We'll get into that. And our bud Lars Tiffany, the Virginia men's lacrosse coach, will join us. That's on tap today on the program. But Anish, we start with women's soccer because last night in Cary, North Carolina, the Florida State Seminoles had an opportunity to win the national championship, the number one seed, taking on the 11 seed folks from Santa Clara. And you know what? It came down to the infamous penalty kicks. And unfortunately, the Noles did not close the deal. Santa Clara wins the national championship. I got to tell you, that's kind of a disappointing kick to the gut. Because, listen, Florida State, undefeated, number one overall seed, playing great defense. Yeah, the offense had been the struggle. But, man, you got the lead 6-7 minutes to go. You close the deal. You win the national championship. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. Overtime happens. Nobody scores. We go to penalty kicks, Anish, and you know how it goes, man. Flip coins on this bad boy. Anything can happen.
Yeah, it's soccer's version of three-card Monty, right? Left, yep. Center, or right. But you have to pick a card. And what was it? One shot missed the goal. Another one hit the post.
Two posts.
Florida State's kind of been living on the edge, though, here for a few games. And having gone to penalty kicks the previous two games, what were you saying on the show yesterday? You do have to score.
Gotta score.
Offense, right? Offense wins championships at some point.
Florida State had beaten both Duke and Virginia in games that were nil-nil that went to penalty kicks, and they took care of business. So it had been a while until the Noles actually found the goal in the net and said, hey, guess what? We scored. I mean, they went 304 playing minutes. 304 playing minutes until finally having a goal in the 63rd minute last night. But, you know, with 6-7 minutes to go, you got possession. They outshot Santa Clara. They controlled the ball 65% of the time. You're in control. Everything is great. And then next thing you know, one little sloppy turnover deep in your own end. And there it is. Oops, sorry. And off to the races you go. And this is, again, with 6-7 minutes to go in the game. Bam. Equalizer. It's now 1-1, and it's a totally different ball game. And Florida State, this was a tough loss. Just telling you. And you go from averaging over 3 goals a game during the regular season, Florida State scores one goal in the last 3 games. Again, still an amazing season, but boy, woulda, coulda, and shoulda for Florida State. That's the deal.
I'll tell you what, though. You got to tip your hat to Santa Clara. 11 seed. They beat Florida State. They beat, North Carolina and Clemson as well?
They became the ACC champs.
They went through some real ACC schools.
Yeah, they did.
They may have to get the ACC championship trophy as well.
Yeah. I mean, listen, that's why we keep score, right? That's the deal. David Teal last night put out a tweet, which was truly remarkable. And I'm just going to read this because he came up with this one. I was like, well, surely that can't be right. But he was right, as usual. But Teal wrote, he said, in each of the 3 seasons that the ACC put 3 teams in the semifinals of the Women's College Cup, it's happened 3 times, 2011, 2013, and this weekend. All 3 times, the ACC had 3 of the 4 final teams in. a team from California ended up winning the national championship. Now, is that weird? Seriously, that's bizarro. 2011, we had Duke, Florida State, and Wake Forest, and Stanford won it all. 2013, you had Florida State, Virginia, and Virginia Tech. UCLA won it all. This go-around, Florida State, North Carolina, Virginia, Santa Clara won it all. So, California jinx, or call it whatever you want to. Again, bottom line is you keep score, and for Florida State, a great year. And Mark Krikorian kind of put it and summed it up perfectly right after the game, unfortunately. Here's Mark Krikorian after last night's loss.
I'm proud of our kids. I think, as I said to you folks after the last round, all of these young women, I think, are to be commended, not just the Florida State kids, all of them, for the sacrifice that they've made through the course of the season, the schools, the conferences, the NCAA, and putting all of this together and allowing it to go on this year in a year like no other, as everyone has suggested. But I think that... it of course hurts. It's hard to lose. It's hard to lose in penalties, but still the same. I think we have a lot to be proud of, a lot to be grateful for, and I'm glad that I have the collection of kids on my team with the uniform that they're wearing. Really proud of their effort and what they've provided.
Coach was right. It's tough though. I mean, and you know, the other thing, Anish, you think about, we had three ACC teams on the women's side, right? In the finals, basically. I just mentioned Florida State, North Carolina, Virginia. On the men's side, we had Pitt and North Carolina in the Final Four. ACC, I mean, to have that many teams playing in Cary, North Carolina, and just could not figure out the combination to bring home any hardware. Marshall, by the way, last night knocked off Indiana in overtime to win the national championship. Unseeded Marshall. So, again, there's another team that knocked off Clemson, and they knocked off North Carolina with only one goal, shot on goal. Still, that was enough to beat the Heels, and they win last night. So, kind of a tough go-around. I mean, it was a great year in soccer for the league. But at the end, you got to close the deal. And unfortunately, the league was not able to do that.
There's two lessons in this. One, you don't want to go to penalty kicks. I mean, listen, I know I sound like a total soccer novice here. But when you go into penalty kicks, you're playing with fire. You bring chance into the equation. Stick with the community chest cards. They're usually better. That means close it out in regulation or in one of the two overtimes. The other point you brought up on the David Teal tweet, about the California teams winning. I mean, maybe you just offer Chico State associate membership. So when you have only in years where there are, multiple ACC teams and this trend is about to happen again, let's say, hey, Chico State, you can be part of our league. So if you win the title, we can claim Chico State.
You know, when you have three of the four, though, you figure, hey, I like my chances. I'm guaranteed to have one in the finals, and I'm just going to roll the dice and figure, you know what, it's our turn to win this thing. But it is hard to believe that David Teal tweet last night. I was like, wow, that is crazy that the ACC could have three of the four, and in every instance, somebody from California was the oddball out, and they ended up taking home the hardware. So, it happens. It's a bummer for Florida State. But Mark Krikorian, I think, had it totally in perspective, given how crazy the pandemic was, and we're still in it, that this season was a two-season, potentially of the fall and the spring. It was remarkable that the ladies were able to get it in. The same thing with the men, to get a season in like this. But, at the end of the day, if you're still standing around, though, man, you want to win that thing, right? You just want to win the championship and bring that thing home. But unfortunately for Florida State, a bit short in penalty kicks last night. I'm going to switch gears on you real quick before we go to break in the first segment. The NCAA men's golf regionals are taking place. They started yesterday. Now, keep in mind, we've got six different regionals around the country. We have nine men's clubs that have qualified for this go-around. All right, so how this bad boy works is it's a 54-hole deal. That's basically 3 days of golf. The top five teams in each regional will move on, and then the individuals that are not on those teams, the top two or three on each one, go to the national championship. So with that said, we've got to go through some scoreboard listing here because we've got six different regionals, but we've kind of got some good news and some not-so-good news for some teams. Florida State is rocking down in the Tallahassee Regional. Florida State and Georgia Tech are 1-2, which is good. Again, this is a three-day deal. You want to be one of the top five teams to move on. So you got Florida State and Georgia Tech rocking and rolling. Wake Forest is out in Washington State. The Deacs are tied for first after the first day. That's a good sign. No question about that. In the Kingston Springs region, NC State is tied for first. Clemson's gotten off to a slow start. They're in seventh, so they got some work to do. Larry does, Penley. And then you got Virginia is tied for eighth. So Virginia and Clemson have some work to do on that front. In Noblesville, Indiana, North Carolina is tied for second. Louisville is fifth. Duke is 11th. And out in Stillwater, they had to play 36 holes yesterday due to bad weather coming. And Notre Dame is tied for ninth. So the Irish have a lot of work to do. So still work to be done. The ladies are already finished up. We already know about that. Duke, Florida State, Wake Forest, and Virginia Tech have moved on. We've got three individuals, not from those teams, that have moved on to the ladies' championships. Those start next week, but the men's regionals are going on as we speak. So if I have if I've not confused you by now, I haven't done a very good job yet. So six regionals, nine ACC teams playing. Some good news and some bad news, Anish, from that perspective.
Yeah, that was a lot. I won't lie. I'm still processing. You played golf, right, in college? So what's yep. the – you know what? I've always wondered. It's such an individual sport, right? So what is a team in golf look like?
You got five players, and you take the four low scores every day. It doesn't have to be the same guys every day. It's like, hey, it's me, you – Josh, Drew, Jen, we're going to go play. That's Team ACC Network. And the low four scores, you add them up as your team for the day. That's your team total. Then we play tomorrow. It could be
– So number same. Five.
Yeah, you throw out the highest score. It's basically what it is. You throw out the highest score okay. each day.
All right.
Right? So that's how that works. That's how that team deal works. And so you got six regionals, top five teams. You're going to have 30 teams move on to the NCAA championships out in Scottsdale. So we'll see how that plays out. But there's some work to be done. And I would say of all those teams I listed, the biggest surprise had to be Clemson. Because, you know, Larry and the guys, they won the ACC championship. And right now, they're seventh. They got to get it in the top five in the next 2 days. So there's work to be done on that front. But Florida State, really, really impressive. We just had John Pack on the show. He went low again, as he always does. The guy's a great, great player. So Florida State playing on their home course, that always helps when you're in Tallahassee. But the fact that Florida State, Georgia Tech are 1-2 in Tallahassee is a good sign. Wake's in great shape. North Carolina looks to be all right. Louisville's got some work to do. They're in the five spot there. So we'll see what goes, where it goes on the golf deal. All right, we've got a busy, busy show. I mentioned what we got guest-wise. We'll take your phone calls, too. You know how we work on that bad boy, 844-SAY-ACCN. Anish is cutting his hair in a week and a half, and he'll look like a new man when we see him in a couple weeks, which will be great. Wes is on vacation this week. I'm heading out of town next week, so Wes will be back in here. So we got stuff to do, though. But we're going to talk next about which ACC blue blood, regardless of sport, is closest to getting back where they want to be. And it's a combination of everything. We're going to give you a little lacrosse, some football, some basketball, and we'll let you guys decide. How close are the Blue Bloods to being back in business? All that is coming up next. Packer and Durham, Anish filling in for Wes. You got us right here on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. This is going to be an interesting exercise here. We're going to give you a number of ACC teams that you could categorize under the, quote, blue blood. All right, and it's not just a sport, it's multiple sports. And at what point in time do you expect the blue bloods to get back to their elite, esteemed position in the world of sports? And Anish, given your expertise in lacrosse, we're going to start with Syracuse, all right? Now, great tradition, great history, national championships, all-time great players, the whole routine. But when you look at Syracuse lacrosse, how would you categorize it as far as the big picture? Now, granted, we just saw them get eliminated in the NCAA tournament. It's not like they're a doormat and can't beat anybody. That's not what we're talking about. But we're talking about a level of excellence that if for folks that follow Syracuse lacrosse, that you expect to be one of the Final Four teams. You expect them to be in the conversation to win national championships. Where would you position Syracuse now? And would you say at what point in time would you expect them to be back on that level?
So you look at Syracuse lacrosse from early 80s through 2009, and they were the program. 11 championships, 10 recognized by the NCAA, but they won 11. Since 2009, they've gone from being the program to a program. They have not won a championship since 09. They've only been to the Final Four once since 09. That was in 2013. They had a streak once of 22 straight years in the Final Four from 83 to 2005, and they've just kind of become another program. They've had good teams. 2010 and 2011, they had the best team in the country. Lost in the first round, lost in the quarterfinals. 2013, they get to the championship game, had a pretty big lead, and then couldn't win a faceoff, and Duke ends up rolling them. 2015, they had arguably the first or second best team in the country. Lost in the quarterfinals. 2017, they had, I thought, a top three team. Lost in the quarterfinals. So it's kind of become another program. They have a really good recruiting class for 2022, so a couple of years down the road. A couple of big things, Pac. One, it's a growing sport, and it's growing geographically. So where talent used to be concentrated in the Baltimore area, in central New York, now it's blown up in North Carolina. Florida kids are coming. You got kids from Georgia. You've got kids from the Midwest, from Colorado, from California, from the Pacific Northwest. There's more players out there, and there's more parity, and everyone's got players. And, 20 years ago, you had four or five teams who had a legitimate shot to win the championship every year. Now you go into the season, there's eight or nine teams usually every year. So it's getting harder for them. It is. I mean, that's just the reality.
But I don't think it's a reach to think, man, you know what? In a year or two, we're right back to where we want to be. I don't think that's crazy. I mean, I really don't. I think Syracuse still has that brand. I think folks still understand who they are. And it's not like you're starting from scratch. I mean, this was a team that was in the NCAA tournament this last weekend. So it's not like, you know, hey, they can't beat anybody again. It's not like you're, hey, we're roadkill. So let's roll over and play dead. I know this was a disappointing end of the year. But my gut tells me that Syracuse can absolutely get back into the conversation again.
I think they can. The issue becomes when, you know, you talk to guys who came to the school 5-10 years ago, they talked about watching Syracuse Memorial Day weekend, championship weekend, Final Four, watching on Memorial Day in the championship game, which was, again, something that program took for granted. Now, the kids who are coming to play college lacrosse say, hey, we remember watching Duke. We remember watching Virginia and Notre Dame and North Carolina winning a championship. So, again, there's better teams out there now. There's better programs out there. Not to say Syracuse isn't one of the top programs, but, you know, everyone else has caught up. And Syracuse isn't, you know, the only blue blood. Johns Hopkins, which, them and Syracuse are the Lakers and Celtics of lacrosse. Hopkins hasn't won a championship since 2007. They've only been to one Final Four since then, and that was, I believe, in 2015. So, you're looking again at the two mainstays, the two juggernauts historically, and everyone else has caught up to them. There's more talent in the game, so you got to work harder these days. Again, the history, the tradition, the dome, they still spend more money on the sport than anybody else. They can get back. There's work to do, though.
All right. Let me switch gears on you. Go football. How about the U? I wish I had a dollar every time I've been asked, is the U back? It's like Texas and Miami. I put in the same category. The Texas is back, Pac.
Yep.
Is the U back? I wish I had a dollar every time I've been asked that question. You think about the Canes, though. Five national championships, but they've only had one 10-win season. Only one. Since 2003. That's when Mark Richt and company in 2017 took care of business and won their division, went to the ACC championship game. we keep waiting, right? Is Miami back? Is Miami back? I do think they're headed in the right direction. But as I always say, Anish, when it comes to these kind of questions, you'll know when you're back when you stop asking the question, right? When you have to ask the question, the answer is no, you are not back. That's how I feel about that whole deal. So what's your take on the Canes?
It's interesting. I feel they finally have the right coach in Manny Diaz. He was a Miami guy. He understands that area. He has roots down there. They made a lot of progress this past year. I know they lost to Clemson in North Carolina. They lost in the bowl game. But bringing De'Eriq King back will be a big deal. And from all accounts, he's recovering quickly from the torn ACL that he suffered in the Cheez-It Bowl. If you get De'Eriq King back and he's healthy, all of a sudden you have a quarterback. And when I look at Miami's struggles since joining the ACC, you mentioned, now since 2003, 1-10-win season, that's when they joined the ACC. We thought they were going to be one of the flagships from the old Big East coming to the ACC. It hasn't been the case. Part of the reason is they have not had great quarterback play. You know, you had Stephen Morris was okay. Brad Kaya had a couple of really good years. But for the most part, you didn't have a Ken Dorsey or a Testaverde or a Kosar or a Toretta, you know, some of these guys that came through before. And I think with De'Eriq King, they finally have a dynamic quarterback. Pack, they've also adapted, right? They finally have gone and said, you know what? We're not going to recruit seven tight ends. We're in South Florida. Speed is all around us. We can get these 4-3 wide receivers. Let's spread it out. Let's get these fast guys. Let's use our slot receivers a little more. So they have adapted to that. That, I think, is the Manny Diaz influence, and that will pay off dividends in the coming years.
Well, we'll find out in week one when they take on Alabama, all right? But I'm just telling you, when you stop asking the question, is the U back, that's when Miami is back. It's that simple. I'm going to keep in the Sunshine State and bring you the Florida State Seminoles. I don't need to tell you. Jimbo Fisher wins the national title. Bobby Bowden, one of the all-time great coaches. Florida State, again, incredible standard. Three national titles. They've won Heismans. But you know what? They've been under 500 in each of the last three seasons. Enter Mike Norvell. Again, you got a recruiting class coming in the top 20. People are excited about that. You just mentioned quarterback with De'Eriq King. You look at Mackenzie Milton now joining the mix. Can an offensive line get fixed? This is a deal in which, again, from an ACC perspective, Miami and Florida State and Virginia Tech, and by the way, Hokies, we're getting to you next. They got to be good. I mean, for the conference to get back in the conversation from a national perspective, all these combinations, Miami, Florida State, Virginia Tech, have to get back to their national brand esteem in terms of, hey, that's a top 15, top 10. Can they be a national championship college football playoff team? It's got to happen.
The league needs somebody to stand up to Clemson. Clemson is not just the big bully on the block. I mean, it's gotten to the point where they're rolling everybody. And it wasn't that long ago when Florida State was Clemson's equal. And Clemson passed Florida State, and Clemson has since lapped Florida State. I covered Mike Norvell a little bit when he was at Memphis, did a few of his games, very highly regarded as an offensive mind. But there are issues that he inherited. His first season is coming off of a pandemic. It was a little bit of a bumpy ride. But when you talk to people who have been around Mike Norvell, they talk about his run blocking schemes and they talk about his X's and O's acumen. To me, this is the right guy for Florida State. It may take a couple of years. I do think the Seminoles have a chance to get back eventually. I don't think it's going to be overnight. There was some purging that had to be done from the last year of Jimbo Fisher to the Taggart era and even to last year. And I think you've got to, you know, clean that place up a little bit and make sure you have the right guys. One thing Dabo Swinney and Clemson have taught us is culture wins, but culture isn't put in overnight.
That's exactly right. Florida State, Miami have to be good for this league. I'm going to throw Virginia Tech in this mix too. You know, when Frank Beamer had it going on in the early part of the century, Virginia Tech was really the flagship for a long, long time in this league because Florida State was kind of going through the end of the Bowden era. Clemson really hadn't found their footing. Wake Forest was being basically the other side of the equation. Boston College was really, really good. But Virginia Tech was the team that was getting the ACC into the BCS and so forth. And for the Hokies, and they reached the bowl every year from 92 to 19. I think there's a lot of pressure on Justin Fuente that 21 has got to be a really, really good year. Their opener against North Carolina, I cannot emphasize enough the importance of that game Friday night in Blacksburg. And for Virginia Tech, you know, hey, there's work to be done. Fan base is hungry. They're ready to win again. Great passionate fans, but they're used to winning. And the question now becomes, how quickly can Virginia Tech get back into that position?
I think you hit it right on the nose. There's a lot of pressure this year on Justin Fuente. It's been a bit of an up and down tenure. The first year, boy, they came in, the new staff, and took the ACC by storm a little bit, at least in the Coastal Division. And then since then, it's been a bit of a mixed bag. Last year, the last couple of years, snake bit a little bit, right? Injuries, guys opting out. It starts with health, and they just haven't had, you know, a whole lot of health, especially on the offensive side of the ball and even on the defensive side. I mean, you have one of the top DBs in the country who says, I'm going to sit this one out this year. That hurts you as a program when you're not the likes of, you know, in Alabama and you got another five-star waiting in the wings. So Virginia Tech is one where I think it's going to happen, but I'm with you. Like, I'm kind of in the wait-and-see mode with Virginia Tech right now.
First game, North Carolina going to get a ton of hype this spring and summer, and Sam Howell, Heisman, all that. No doubt. He doesn't look like they're going to be really, really good. Friday night in Blacksburg, especially if everybody's locked and loaded, Lane Stadium, Enter Sandman, to start the season, that is a monstrous game. Not only within the league, but kind of a tone setter for both North Carolina and Virginia Tech. We'll talk about that a bunch the next couple months. Before we go to break, though, I'm not done. How about North Carolina men's basketball? Hubert Davis, new man in town, just celebrated his birthday. The Heels, we know, 6 NCAA men's basketball championships, but the last 2 years, 32 and 30. Now, college hoops is goofy, right? This transfer portal, we don't even know what a roster looks like right now. But Anish, what's your gut tell you with Hubert in the future of North Carolina basketball getting back into the elite status?
They've got to recalibrate their approach a little bit. With the transfer portal, it is so hard to build teams. And Roy Williams saw that toward the end. If you look at his championship teams, they were all older teams, right? That first team with Sean May and Raymond Felton, those are Matt Doherty's guys, but they were older guys when Roy Williams took over, and he wins with that team. The Tyler Hansbrough, Ty Lawson team, again, older guys winning with juniors and seniors. And yeah, they did have talented youngsters on the team, but the core, older guys. Same thing the last championship they had, right, with the Joel Berrys of the world. Older teams. And it's hard to do that now because you can't put the spreadsheet in and say, okay, let's get these guys in and these guys in. And all right, we might take, you know, our lumps. And for North Carolina, you know, a down year is what, 10-6 in the ACC, 10-8. But, hey, in 2 years when these guys are juniors, you know, we're going to be winning the league. We're going to be a Final Four type team. You can't even project that because you don't know if those guys are going to be there. So maybe the recruiting approach changes a little bit with Hubert Davis. They do target more of these one-and-dones. They do go into the portal a little more. The great thing with college basketball, you're always one recruiting class away from being relevant again.
I think basketball is the hardest one to predict because I just, like you said today, I mean, what does your roster look like? As a fan, a coach, an administrator, we have no idea. It changes literally by the hour. So I think Hubert's got great energy. He obviously loves the institution. North Carolina should be able to sell itself. It's still one of those brands without question. But what college basketball looks like moving forward, your guess is as good as mine. I have no feel for it whatsoever, but it will be fun to watch Hubert take over the reins and what he turns North Carolina basketball into. Quick break. When we come back, we're going to switch gears again, and we're going to go tennis. And one of the cool stories right now in the NCAA tennis tournament is D-U-K-E, Duke. Jamie Ashworth joins the show, makes her debut, have some fun, find out what's going on with the Blue Devils as they get ready to take on #1 seed North Carolina. That's coming up. Packer and Durham. Anish filling in for Wes. You got us right here on the ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
And Durham on a Tuesday. Anish filling in for Wes. And now it's time to talk a little tennis. Duke women's tennis. They are surprising everybody and their brother. Let's go to Jamie Ashworth, who's rocking and rolling. He's up early with us. Jamie, first of all, welcome to the show. And congratulations. You got everybody nervous again. Here we go with Duke tennis again, right? Life's good.
Yeah, life is good. Life's good in Orlando. It's we started this thing with there's 264 Division I teams and there's eight left and we're one of those eight. And so we're fortunate to be here and thanks for having me here this morning.
Jamie, what clicked for you guys during this NCAA tournament run after a regular season that probably wasn't up to the standards that you guys have had in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've really come together as a team. I mean, we've talked about it. it's a weird sport in that sense. You know, tennis is when you get to the core of it, it's an individual sport. But in college, you're out there playing for each other, playing for your teammates. And, we've done a really good job the past couple of weeks of really playing for our team. We talked the other day about before our UCF match about we are we, and everything we do, we're in this together and trust each other and believe in each other. And they've done a great job of buying into that. And I think we're playing our best tennis. I think, one of the things that we're fortunate enough to be playing in the tournament, we're fortunate enough to be playing this year. And I think, the competitive level took its toll a little bit on us during the year. We were fighting to compete, fighting with our academics, fighting with the COVID stuff. And I think we're rested, we're relaxed, we're playing free right now, and we're really enjoying the moment and enjoying each other. And so we're looking forward to another challenge coming up.
Coach, you mentioned playing free. How much of that is mental? I mean, we know about the physical part, right? But how much of that is mental where you just say, okay, let's just go play. We're playing tennis. Let's go have fun doing what we love to do.
Exactly. And that's what we try to stress is, hey, you guys have been doing this since you're, especially in our sport, you guys have been doing this since you're 8, 9, 10 years old. And so just do what you love. Remember why you love it. Remember why you love competing, why you love playing, why you love representing Duke, and just go out and have fun with it and see what happens. And if we can do that, we'll let the results take care of itself. That happened in Waco a little bit and happened the other night against a really good Central Florida team.
Coach, one of the great things about tennis, there's always such an international flavor to the sport. You have that on your roster, Czechoslovakia, the Czech Republic, Ireland, the UK. What is that international flavor? What sort of perspective does that bring to you and to the rest of the team?
Yeah, plenty of international experience. I mean, I think, the landscape of college tennis has changed over the last, I hate to say I've been a part of for 25 years, but the landscape has definitely changed, and it's opened up a lot of doors for a lot of people. And so I think the more eyes we have, the more perspective, like you said, that we can have on our program and our team and bring in different kids from different cultures and different backgrounds. It's great for everybody. Great to experience. The world is large, but our kids all played against each other on these international circuits. And so all these international kids and, you mentioned Czech Republic and Ireland, and they all know each other. They're all familiar with each other. They're closer to each other than we are as coaches. And, they know each other. And word has spread across the globe that college tennis is a definite possible pathway to be a professional tennis player. And you're starting to see it more and more. It's definitely gone in cycles and circles. And, these kids want to compete and want the opportunity of education. And it's been great to have a great sense of community and belonging among all these international kids.
Jamie, when you said 25 years, it was almost like you pinched yourself for a second. Like, I can't believe I've been doing this for 25 years. But in that run, though, you've had 10 Final Four, 17 ACC championships, and oh, by the way, that national championship too. Can you put, again, it's different era, different time, different team, but can you kind of get a sense of when you've got a makeup of a club that's capable of winning it all?
I think so. I mean, I think you it's more of their roles, understanding roles. I mean, you get to a certain level and every kid on your team, the other teams can hit a forehand and everyone can hit a backhand. And it's learning to play for a team. It's learning to, you know, play for each other. It's different. I mean, we've had some great players who, you know, I remember a story with one of our best players that we've ever had who, you know, played in the U.S. Open and was playing Maria Sharapova in the U.S. Open. And we're playing actually, you know, a year later, we're playing Georgia in the semifinal or quarterfinals of the NCAA tournament. And she was talking about how nervous she was. And I said, you played in Ash Stadium in New York against Maria Sharapova. And she said, but that's different. It's not for my team. It's not for my teammates. And, you know, this is much more nerve wracking. And so, I mean, you develop a sense of camaraderie, develop a sense of understanding roles is the biggest thing. All these kids come in and you know, professional tennis is their goal and those who accept their roles and you see it build over the course of the year. And you know, I love this team. I love where our team is at right now. And, you know, like you said, we probably didn't have the regular season we're accustomed to, but we're coming together at the right time and, you know, we'll see what happens. So yeah, it's definitely a challenge. It's a fun challenge. And the years go by, but the kids keep you young. And I'm sure you hear that from a lot of coaches, but yeah, for sure.
Coach, you've got North Carolina coming up next. What will it take to beat UNC?
Yeah, it's you know, Brian's done a great program down from the road from us. We've come 600 miles to play a team that's 8 miles away. And you know, I think we're as prepared as we can possibly be. And our conference has been great. There's eight teams remaining in this thing and four from the conference and three happen to be from the Triangle, which is an amazing thing. And, you know, if you're going to ask us who we're most familiar with in the country, it's definitely North Carolina. And you know, they're the same. It goes the same both ways. It's definitely a reciprocal thing. And you know, we see them in a lot of individual tournaments. We see them in the you know, regular season. And, you know, we're looking forward to that opportunity. They've done a great job. And, you know, really just go out there, like I said earlier, and play free and play with nothing to lose. And you know, play with belief. I think our team believes right now, you know, that anything can happen and we'll go out there and play like that and play with that opportunity. We have a tremendous opportunity in front of us. I told them last week when we were in Waco playing, you know, there's a million excuses you can make, but you only have one opportunity. And so let's take advantage of that one opportunity. And so, you know, we've done a great job with that.
Coach, it is rather unique, isn't it? You just mentioned, you got North Carolina, NC State's going to jump on Georgia, Florida State staying next too, right? Exactly. But it is amazing how everybody right there in the backyard still playing tennis. Kind of crazy.
It is. It is. It's incredible. And when I started, like I said, 25 years ago, the conference was not that strong. I mean, to be honest with you, and across the board, we've done a great job of building our conference. The coaches in our conference are great. The facilities are great. You know, the kids have really risen to the occasion. You know, on the team side, on the individual side, I think, you know, we have something like nine of the top 16 seeds in the individual tournament next week, and, you know, six of the top 10, and we have like, I think, six of the top 10 doubles teams in the country. And it really is a quality league, and there's no day off. And so when you get to these matches, like our match against the UCF or against Baylor the other day, and against these great teams, we're prepared as we can possibly be. And it's a great challenge every time we play for us as you know, we get to compete in the best conference in the country. And hats off to everybody in the conference. It's helped develop that. It's great.
Well, again, continued success. You've done an amazing job, and you got people talking again between Florida State, Duke, NC State, North Carolina. It's go time in women's tennis at the right time. And again, we appreciate you joining us this morning.
Yeah, we hope so. Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it. We appreciate the attention to women's tennis and the women's sports. It was a great weekend that ever for all women's sports at Duke with a couple championships. And, you know, we hope to keep that going this week. So I appreciate it.
You got it, Jamie. Best of luck, man. Take care of yourself.
All right. Thank you.
Jamie Ashworth, 25 years.
Thank you, Coach.
And Duke, taking care of business. Duke, North Carolina, tomorrow. I don't care what the sport is, man. They will get after it. It'll be great. By the way, speaking of great stuff, we got something for you coming up on Friday. We're going to have the Athens Regional matchup between 13-seeded Duke and UNC Greensboro. It's at noon Eastern. The Blue Devils, of course, coming off winning the ACC Softball Championship in only their fourth season as a Division I team, and this is their first trip to the postseason. UNCG and Duke Friday noon right here on ACC Network. When we come back, in case you missed it, yesterday Kevin Corrigan was on board. The Irish and Maryland hooking up in a monster matchup this upcoming weekend. You'll get a chance to see what Kevin's got to say. That's coming up next right here on Packer and Durham. Anish filling in for Wes. You got us on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. 844-SAY-ACCN. Many thanks to Jimmy Ashworth making his debut on the program. Duke, North Carolina tomorrow. Women's tennis NCAA tournament. I mentioned NC State's got Georgia. That's the 6 against the 3 seed. And Florida State's still alive. They take on Texas. So that's what's left with the women's tennis. But when it comes to lacrosse, men's lacrosse, monster matchup. Anish, you told me yesterday, Notre Dame, Maryland is the go-to match. Kevin Corrigan joined us yesterday, and he had a lot to say.
Yeah, Kevin Corrigan, the head coach at Notre Dame, when the bracket came out, everybody looked at that quarterfinal matchup, Maryland and Notre Dame, and we asked Kevin Corrigan about his thoughts about the bracketing.
First of all, I've been doing this for all these years. I've never once successfully predicted what the tournament field was going to look like, so I don't go into it with too much in the way of expectations. And I learned a long time ago that you don't want to be rooting for a certain matchup or rooting against another matchup.
You hope you have a next game. That's issue one. And whoever it is, awesome, we'll be prepared, ready to go. But the one thing we know about your team, though, Coach, is you're going to play great defense. That does not change. And that wasn't more evident in the game against Drexel, where you just said, hey, listen, we're going to go shut somebody down, so let's go do what we do best. I thought you accomplished your mission.
Yeah, we did. You know, we were disappointed that we gave up, you know, I think 3 or 4 rebound goals. And if you don't give those up, then you really have done a good job with them and their set pieces and in their transition offense and all of that. Our goalie was terrific. Liam just had a great day, and thank goodness. You know, I didn't feel like we got career days out of a lot of people the other day, but we got some guys that played exceedingly well, and Liam was one of them, and couldn't have picked a better day for it.
Kevin, one of the things that stuck out to me, the entire first round goalie play. I mean, teams that won seemed to get really stellar goalie play, and the game that you guys had against Drexel, what was that like? It wasn't just Liam, it was their goalie too. I mean, that was an impressive display from both goaltenders. I mean, that was a master class.
Yeah, I think Drexel's goalie had 3 one-on-one saves in the fourth quarter. It was terrific. It was fun to watch, if you're not watching from my seat anyway. But I agree with you, Anish. I saw it in other games as well. The goalies are playing really, really well right now. And if you're going to score a goal, you're going to earn it.
Graduation ceremony is coming up this weekend in South Bend. Anish is already complaining about how tough it is to find hotel rooms. You got a bunk bed up there above the garage that Anish can come in and out and take care of business. Can we work out some kind of deal?
Yeah, I'm sure we can. Yeah, just give me a call, Anish. We'll hook you up.
Otherwise, Quint and I were going to camp up in the bell tower.
Yeah, if Clark was with you, we could spend all our evenings in the kitchen, you know, and go head to head.
That'd be good. By the way, as far as experience, Anish will finally find a place to stay. But when it comes to experience, Coach, I mean, all these teams are good, right? I mean, listen, nobody's fooling anybody when you reach this stage of the season. But how big a deal is playing at home and experience when it comes to the quarterfinal match? Now, moving on.
Yeah, I'm probably not the guy to ask. We've never had a quarterfinal game at home. So, you know, it's probably something I'm going to learn about. But listen, being at home is great. Your guys are just comfortable. You know, you're not going to have the logistical issues that you have when you're traveling and trying to get to places and the inevitable things go wrong. So, that part of it is nice to know. You're just kind of the certainty of your schedule and everything else. And we're coming out of exam week and everything else. So not having to you know, herd guys around for the next, you know, 3 or 4 days is again, a great advantage, I think, at this time of the year.
Kevin, last thing for me, you know, talking to coaches this past week, there was a theme of gratitude. Hey, we're here. We have this opportunity in the postseason. And from your standpoint, you know, getting here, you want to celebrate the small accomplishments. But when you kind of look back to, you know, what would you say has been the most rewarding part about this journey with this team?
Well, that's a tough question because I feel like in so many ways this wasn't that unusual. This is the one thing that wasn't that unusual. Every time you left your house or went to the grocery store or anything else, you were reminded of all the things that were different. Going to practice every day was the one thing that wasn't that different. And the commitment that our guys made and the commitment that the university made, frankly, I'm so, you know, thankful for that. And the fact that they allowed us to participate in as normal a circumstances as possible. Now, that said, we didn't have a locker room all year. You know, we were dressing in the indoor field house, you know, by and large, working out of tubs we bought at Lowe's. Just being able to get on the field every day was that kind of 2 hours of normalcy in your day. I am grateful that we had the opportunity to do it, but also grateful that was what it always was. And that's a tribute to the kids and the attitude that they took to it, which was, you know, we're here. We control the next 2 hours. Let's just do that as well as we can.
Maybe that field house is a good spot for a niche this weekend. Just offering a suggestion for all parties,
you know,
involved
what?
Here.
I'll get you your own tub.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna camp out in Loftus. I'm gonna be in Loftus. It's air conditioned, right? It's air conditioned.
Yeah. More or less. We can open a door.
I love it. Before we let you go, though, Coach, Pat Kavanaugh. We don't do a show without watching Notre Dame highlights. Obviously, your defense has been out of sight, but man, Pat's had some kind of year, hasn't he? I mean, he is just a dynamic player on both ends. He just makes things happen.
It's fun to watch. It's fun to see where he came from. When he was a junior in high school, he was 5'3", 125 pounds. And somehow, you know, found a way to play at that level. But you see what that did is it made him tough and it made him creative and it made him just play with great awareness of everything because he had to be able to play at that level. Now that he's, you know, physically matured and everything, and he brings that whole skill set, to his athleticism and everything else. And it just makes him a really unique player and a terrific player and teammate.
Appreciate Coach Corgan joining us yesterday on the program. But Anish, as you pointed out, Notre Dame, Maryland, grab your popcorn. Sunday, 2:30. Get that one all over you.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one. Maryland's got Jared Bernhardt. Notre Dame's got Pat Kavanaugh. Both are finalists, 2 of 5, for the Tewarton, the Heisman of college lacrosse. Maryland's got one of the best offenses in the country. Notre Dame's so good defensively. Just a great matchup. Honestly, we're getting spoiled because we're getting a championship-worthy, Memorial Day-worthy game in the quarters.
Going to be good. When we come back, hour number two of Packer and Durham, we're going to offer some suggestions to change the structure of college sports. Some of these you'll love. Some you may say these guys have lost their minds. So we will explain when we return. It's Packer and Durham. Anish filling in for Wes. We got us right here on ACC Network. And we continue to stream live on the ESPN app.
This is the Packer and Durham podcast.